This is a pre-written common law trust that includes the indentures, the articles, and the bylaws. The indenture is kind of like the establishment of the trust agreement, and your articles is kind of, it tells how your trust organization is organized. The articles is what's going to be filed at your Secretary of State level if you wish to put your organization on file with the Secretary of State level. And it's not required. It's not required to make your trust active or valid. However, there may be a few services or a few contracts that you may want to enter into with the state. And if you don't have your articles filed with the Secretary of State, they may not want to do business with you. So anyways, you know, as you see, the trust, it says there's the indenture, which is the establishment of the trust instrument, and there's the articles, and then there's the bylaws. All of those are included in this pre-written common law trust. Pretty much in that order, indenture, articles, bylaws. Now, the first thing I would recommend, and this is if you say you ordered this product and you wanted to get your trust up and running. First, well, let me just kind of throw this out here. This is the way, you know, this is one way that you can look at it. A lot of people have ordered this trust and they were saying, well, I don't know anyone who would make a good trustee. You know, my thoughts is this. Say if you were trying to protect your family's assets, why then wouldn't you be the trustee? Most of you listening to this and most of you that are interested in this product just need to have more faith in your own abilities, because technically you know more about the law than almost anyone else just because you're researching to the subject that most people don't. Even attorneys don't really even know the law. And a lot of the public employees don't know the law. So I would say it'd be beneficial for you to become the trustee and make the beneficiary perhaps your children or some other organization that you create. A beneficiary could be anybody, but to have a real working trust, you need a settlor, and sometimes that's called the grantor. That's the person who delivers an asset over to the trust. And then you need a trustee to manage that asset for the beneficiary. The settlor hands over an asset in trust of the trustee, in care of the trustee, for the benefit of the beneficiary. So those are your parties. Those are the parties that you're going to need. Now, when you look at the pre-written common law trust, it's written in such a way that if you wanted to be in control of everything, or you wanted to be the overseer, then you probably want to be serving in the role as the trustee. Now, the trust can be established by any piece of property or any asset that's placed in trust. That's kind of what the birth of the trust is. A trust is created when the settlor slash grantor hands over a particular asset or a piece of property to the trustee for the benefit of someone else, or maybe even for himself, you know, but that's the establishment of the trust. Now, once that piece of property is handed over and the trust becomes active, you know, the trustee can reinvest that property. He can open up bank accounts. He can borrow against the property. He can acquire more property. Because what he's doing is he's building up the estate for the beneficiary. This is the role that I would recommend that you play in a trust that you're involved with. So if you were going to do that, right, say, you know, what you may do is get a good friend or a neighbor or a relative, and you would take this trust indenture that you've ordered and you would say, hey, you know, you would allow them to be the settlor or the grantor. And typically this trust is written in a way that after the settlor delivers, you know, after he hands property over to the trustee for the beneficiary, you know, he makes his intentions known in the trust indenture. And after he delivers the property over, for the most part, he pretty much walks away and does his own thing, because now the trust is set into motion and the instructions, which are called bylaws, are written, and the trustee knows how to operate. And there's instructions left for the trustee and the other trustees, as the trust, you know, if the trustee hires or appoints other trustees, there's instructions as to how things can be modified if they need to be modified. So I guess what I'm saying is, and hypothetically, just so you can understand, if, you know, I were having a whole bunch of issues, you know, house and car issues and creditors and debtors, and I'm starting to say, well, it looks like a lot of people may be after my assets, and I had this trust indenture, and then my next door neighbor said, hey, here's two pieces of silver, and he signed off as the settlor, the one establishing trust for the benefit of my children or maybe some other beneficiary, any beneficiary for that matter. Well, and then, you know, so if he's the settlor and I'm the trustee and we sign this in front of the notary and he puts assets in trust and he goes on about his business, now I'm the trustee responsible for administering the affairs of the trust. This gives me all the authority that I need in order to show up on the behalf of the trust if I had to defend a property interest, or, you know, so I probably overdid that a little bit, but I guess what I wanted you guys to understand is, I think for those of you who might be brand new at this, it's more beneficial for you to serve in the role as the trustee, because then you're in a position where you're not making policy, but you're carrying out policy. And the trust law gives you kind of, it's almost as if, just so you can understand it better, I'd say this, it's almost as if it's its own sovereign little nation, you understand, in the world of commerce. You know, it's a fortified position to be in. So it would be beneficial for you to serve in the role of the trustee. Now, this is a perfect place for me to give a little, you know, an idea of what I'm talking about. And I think I gave this idea before. I gave you this scenario before where I was operating as a trustee, which I'm always operating in the capacity of a trustee. If I'm driving a car and that car has previously been deeded over to the trust organization, then anytime somebody pulls me over or asks me any question why I'm in that car, I'm in my official capacity as a trustee. And as a matter of fact, I always make sure that my plates are not registered to an individual's name, but they're registered to a trust. So I was pulled over before with no license and no insurance and I didn't have any registration paperwork in the car with me at the time. But fortunately, I was able to, it wasn't an issue because they didn't technically know who I was. I wasn't really breaking any law. And when they ran the plates, they were trust plates. They're a trust organization. So they didn't really know how to proceed. They were asking me for a license. And I was like, you know, I said my spiel, whatever it is I say. And, you know, they were wanting to search the car. And I was pretty much able to tell them, you know, as the trustee, I'm not allowed to, you know, I don't have the authority to let you search the car. See, I was able to shift the blame and put it on the trust because the trust is its own entity. And they were like, well, you're driving the car. And I said, I understand what you're saying, but I'm under specific bylaws of the trust. So I said, you know, what you're asking me to do, I don't have the authority to do. So you see, and this is the same thing that plays out, say, if you have a piece of property that is no longer yours because it was deeded over to a trust. You know, the trust is its own separate entity. It has its own separate, let's say, rights, for lack of a better term. So once property is conveyed into a trust, you have no more interest, except unless you're a trustee. You maybe have duties and obligations, but you have to look at it as no longer being yours. And that's a powerful position to be in because the trust can lease property or it can put anyone in a property that it so desires. But it creates a protection because anybody that wants to come and take property that feels they're entitled to it, they don't have any contract agreement with the trust. That's not to say that there's no way they can get the property, but now in order to get the property, they have to show that they have an interest in a property. And technically, banks can't have banks don't have rights to property. So it's going to be kind of hard for a bank to do any kind of dispossessory or foreclosure action on real property if they don't have a contract with the person that's in possession of the property. Because there is no law that gives a bank rights to property. They only get rights by contracts, which is why they go after you. They foreclose on you. So that's why I hope that makes sense of how deeding your property and assets over in trust can protect them. And it's the same when somebody brings a lawsuit against your straw man, and then they either garnish your wages or, you know, if they garnish your wages or say perhaps they come after your assets, they're not your assets anymore once they're conveyed over. So it's a powerful, you know, you're in a powerful position being the trustee of a trust. And mind you, if you have three or four trustees, if someone's trying to proceed against your straw man's assets, trying to ignore the fact that they're registered to a trust, you can have one of the other trustees show up for that matter. And when I say show up, that can be in writing or whatever, just so it doesn't create any, just so you, that there's no conflict of interest. So the first thing that I would do if I knew I was going to be the trustee of a trust that was about to be established is I would go open up a post office box. Now, One of the benefits, again, and this is what I like to do, especially if I'm going to be involved in searching out certain remedies and pushing the limits, you know, I want to have some level of privacy. I don't want to be exposed. I want to kind of be able to operate invisibly. Now, let me mention something else. A lot of people ask this question, and I think this is going to be a lot of good information. A lot of people wonder, how can they work a 9-to-5 and be, well, I don't want to say a 9-to-5. If you're working in the corporate world, they have something called a 1099. You can 1099 through your trust. I know because I've done it before for a brief amount of time. Basically, what I'm saying is, if you were to get hired by a professional company, you can basically tell them you don't want to work in your own name. You will work from behind your trust or your organization. So it'll be like you're subcontracting. And this is a little bit advanced. This is nothing that anybody has to do, but, you know, it's just an option. You know, with this trust, if you say if you were going to work for, let's say, Bank of America, you if they would allow you to, you can do the 1099 way, which is basically it'd be like ABC Trust Company in a contract with Bank of America. So they'll pay the trust company, and from the trust company, you can pay yourself. That's a little bit advanced. It's simple stuff, but it's, you know, it's just a little advanced. I just wanted to throw that out there. The good thing about, you know, you don't have to get an EIN for your trust, but you're going to have a very hard time opening a bank account without one. But the good thing about having the EIN for your trust is you can almost, you know, have, you can almost replace your social security number with that EIN as far as any type of service or anything you're going to need, including bank accounts, telephone services, cable bills, water bills, electric bills, and all those things. So first thing is open up the post office box. Now, if you want complete privacy, you can hire an attorney, or and because an attorney can act kind of as if he's your registered agent, and he can open up the post office box on your behalf and hand you the keys, because the attorneys have that attorney-client confidentiality thing. I don't want to say that's an overkill, but for just anybody listening to this, you don't have to do all that. But if somebody has a very specific reason of why they want to be completely invisible, then you may want to consider having an attorney open up the P.O. box for you. Now, when you open up the P.O. box, you're going to have to present two forms of ID. I think a birth certificate will not suffice. But I want to encourage you to, at a lot of these different places, try at first submitting affidavits of identification, because they are taking affidavits of identification certain places. Now, when you call the IRS to get an EIN number, the reason I say get the post office box first is because the main question they're going to ask you is, where's the address where they're going to send correspondence for the trust? And then you give them the post office box. And then they're going to ask you what day was the trust funded, I believe, and that's going to be the same day that you signed the documents in front of the notary. And they're going to ask you who's the responsible person, so you can put yourself down as the administrator or the trustee with the IRS so they can send correspondence to you should they need to. They're also going to ask you the tax ID number or the social security number of you or the administrator or whoever you're putting down. You can simply tell them that you don't have one, and they'll be fine with that. All right. So once you have the EIN number, you can then, and at any time, you can go use your articles of organization and register with your Secretary of State. Okay, so now you go to your bank and you make sure that you open up a non-interest bearing checking account. And what they'll do is they'll ask you for your EIN. You'll give them the EIN and they'll ask you to see your trust indentures. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to know more about this process many times than the banker does, because this is not something that they do every day. So they'll be in their computer system trying to figure out how to set this up the right way. So make sure that you make it clear that you want a non-interest bearing checking account. And now here's the thing, that I'm gonna have to leave this up for you guys to figure out how to do this. They're gonna wanna see an ID, driver's license, or something like that. Now, their goal is to, for you to be a signer on that account, they really want your social security number. So when you're giving them IDs and things like that, they're putting you in matching databases, coming up with the match for your information. Now, you can avoid that by just, you know, and that's another thing. I would recommend first trying to give them an affidavit of identification or giving them a different type of ID. You can get IDs from World Service Authority. You know, try to be, how can I explain it? Try to be as invisible as possible, but don't argue. If they're not going to take the ID, then give them whatever form of ID they want to. But you shouldn't be forced to produce a social security number when you're opening up an account, but because they don't ask you for it directly, don't think that they're not using a matching database and pulling your information. But, you know, I'm not going to go into that because, you know, you can figure out how to open up a bank account without a social security number if you want to. It's not difficult. It deals with the W8BEN. And the simplest way to do it is just go to the bank and say, I need an account and I don't have a social security number. Let them go through the computer and figure out how it's done and let them open up the account for you. Now, I'll tell you the smartest way to go about opening up an account for your trust with absolutely no social security number tied to it is first go into the bank and open up a personal bank account and open it up with, you know, say, whatever ID they ask for, and when they ask for your social, tell them you don't have one and let them go through their computer and figure out how to open up the account because they can't. And they probably will require you to fill out a W8BEN IRS form or maybe some other forms, and you'll give that to them. Once you have your personal account set up without a social security number, then you may want to go set up the account for the trust and then add yourself to it as a signer or trustee or whatever. Now you can add multiple signers and trustees to the account, but they're going to all have to be there and sign in front of the banker at the same time. Let's see. And now also they're going to want a copy of your trust indentures and your bylaw. Well, they're going to want a copy of your trust. That's all they're really going to say because they don't always know what they're looking for. So I have the trust sectioned off into the indenture, the articles, and the bylaws, because all I would really give them is a copy of the indentures and a copy of the articles of organization. You want to kind of keep your bylaws separate because that's kind of like the internet workings of your trust, and you don't have to show those to anyone. But just be advised, you can always go in there and modify and change things. But when you give this to the bank, they're just going to scan a copy of it. They're not going to read through it because they're not looking for anything. But pretty much, you know, what they won't tell you and what they probably don't know, but what you're doing is you're giving them the agreement. Those bylaws are superior to anything else that's going on. So you can actually write certain provisions within your bylaws and give it to them and allow them to scan it in if you plan on doing some different things with the account. And you want to make it clear that of your authority to do so. That's a little advanced. That's why I'm just kind of browsing through it, just throwing some ideas out there at you. As far as putting automobiles, you say you want to put an automobile in a trust. Well, typically, they're not going to do any kind of transfer down at the motor vehicle division unless you don't have any liens against your cars. Just like any other time, you can't sell your car. They're not going to transfer the title if you're not done paying on it. But if you're done paying on it, it's as simple as going down there, bringing your trust indenture and flipping the title over and transferring it over to the trust, and just, you know, just bring your documents and let them do the rest. You don't have to figure out the policy. They may not know the policy, but require them to go back and look it up. They'll look it up. They'll figure out how to do it. Identification cards, your identification cards. You can go to World, if you go to Google and you type in World Service Authority. That's a good place to go get identification if you don't want state IDs and things of the sort, if you don't want to use that. The IDs that you get there, whether it's the passport or the identification card, they're not going to take them everywhere, but they will take them many places. And it's best for you to just throw it out as an ID and let them determine whether or not they're going to take it, because I've been able to use it at banks, and at times I've been able to use it doing certain post office transactions, but there's many places that won't take them. Okay, let's see. And as far as services, say if you're going to go get, say you already have electric service and you want to transfer it over to the trust. Well, if it's a certain property, you know, first I recommend that you deed the property over to the trust. You can use a quit claim deed. You can find that on the website here. Deed the property over to the trust. Then once you have that deed, go record it down at the county. And then go to your utility company and say, hey, this property has been transferred into a trust and I need to establish the services in the name of the trust. And they will do it. You know, they'll want to see your paperwork. I always say show them the indentures and the articles. And they may want to see your ID as a trustee. You may want to try giving them the affidavit of identification or giving them another form of ID that that clearly shows that you're not in a jurisdiction. And you can press them and force them to have to take that ID. But if you don't, you're not really ready to go through that type of resistance, or, you know, just give them an ID, because the services will be transferred to the trust. They'll show up in the trust name. They will not show up in your name. It's the same for a cell phone. So you can go, like, if you got two or three trustees, you can go to a cell phone provider and get a company plan. Again, they're just going to want to see your articles and the indentures. Now, here's one thing. When you go get these different services, sometimes people may say, well, are you registered with the state? If they're asking you that, in my experience, usually they're just asking a question, and they're not going to verify, and they probably don't even know how to verify. So I just say yes. And then, you know, they just go ahead and go through the system and give you what you're asking for. Anyways, I thought I'd make this video for those who have ordered the pre-written common law trust and those that are thinking about it. And I want to highly encourage you again to read Wise Trustee Handbook, because it's going to give you a lot of information, and it's going to give you a lot of supportive references and case laws to back that up. So thank you for watching, or thank you for listening.